Hello, this is Paul Wilkinson from MasteringPortraitPhotography.com. This is episode 14 of our weekly podcast, and in this episode, I'm going to talk about how to set up your edit suite, or at least how I've done it. Hello. It's Sunday. And for those of you of a calendar mind, you'll notice that our weekly podcast has in fact taken 8 days to produce. Sorry about that. It's been a very busy week. It turns out that holding on to 7 days and then doing a podcast, then 7 days and doing a podcast is tricky when you have a calendar quite as chock full as ours. But I'm here. It's Sunday. It's been a beautiful day. Oh my goodness, has it been a beautiful day. Yesterday, frankly, a bit of a disappointment. Cold and wet, exactly as people might think of in the UK in May. It shouldn't have been, but it was, and it was grim. I had a shoot, but it was uncomfortably chilly. However, today we woke up, it was dry, and then the sun has come out, and I have spent a fantastic afternoon walking the Chilterns, walking the Ridgeway with Sarah, my wife, and our stupid dog, who has walked 100 times further than we have. A 5 mile walk, and he must have done at least 50. I'm sure of it. Everywhere we went in a straight line, and he just barreled around us through the undergrowth, over the branches, nearly across a road, but generally had the most marvellous time. Sat for a happy hour in a pub in a valley and had a pint of beer, and then walked our way home. Got home and had to go buy some gravel, and spent half an hour when I was already tired lifting a couple of hundred weight of gravel into our garden path. There you go, that's our Sunday. There has been a busy week. The wedding that I was about to go and do 8 days ago, it turned out to be such a beautiful wedding. The blossoms out. It was a joyous wedding with the most wonderful sunset. And on top of that, the best thing of all was the bride was a ballerina from English National Ballet, of all places. So everything you asked her to do, she did with poise and elegance and gentleness. It was just lovely. Every shot is like you posed it, and posed it really well as well. So just beautiful. The day after that was the Hearing Dogs Music Festival. The Hearing Dogs Music Festival. There's a sentence I never thought I'd say. It's called subwoofer. Obviously, forgive the pun on the words, but some incredible bands. Very hot, incredibly hot. So hot, I spent the entire time looking a little like Elvis Presley with my collar turned up, because although I'd put on suntan lotion, I was worried it wasn't going to be enough and I was going to turn up back at home with the brightest of rednecks, and didn't fancy that very much. So I spent a good chunk of it with people looking at me slightly weirdly that I'd had an Elvis moment and had turned my collar up for the look of the thing rather than the practicality. But hey, you know, it was me that got home without a burnt neck. Slightly burnt arms, but not a burnt neck. But absolutely a brilliant afternoon. Let's hope they do that next year. Photographing festivals is not something that I'm known for. It's certainly not something I specialise in, but it was great. And because I had an access all areas pass, of course, it meant I could get onto the stage with the musicians. And that's great fun. As an ex-musician, can you be an ex-musician? Do you ever stop being a musician? But, well, I don't play anymore. But as a musician, then, of course, it's wonderful to be on the stage and with a camera right in amongst it and to photograph the atmosphere going on. Brilliant musicians, and a great day. And then later in the week, as a favour to an old friend of our business, and there's a long story behind this, one that I may one day tell. She is a phenomenal furniture designer and used to run a design course, which is now defunct, but is now involved with one of the design courses in Oxford, and brought her students over to our studio to photograph both them, so they need portraits for their profiles and advertising, and to photograph their pieces from this year. Brilliant. If you get a chance to do this stuff, give it a go. Don't think that just because it's not a face, you shouldn't do it. Some of my understanding of light has come almost entirely from my product design background. I trained as an industrial designer, and when I'm photographing people's work like this, your skill with the lighting, or my skill with the lighting, is what will bring out the textures and shapes. It'll make things look a certain way. Your lens choice is absolutely critical. Everything about it. And of course, all of these skills are really transferable when you're photographing portraits, particularly when you're photographing portraits out in the environment. And an awful lot of photography is going that way, where you're out in a location. And understanding light and understanding your camera and lens choice, or rather your lens choice, is of course integral to it. So occasionally I will do these things, and I did it as a favor to the course. They needed the photography, and I too would have killed to have had the kind of images we created for them when I graduated. Though who knows, maybe then I would have got a job as a designer and I would never have ended up as a photographer. And then we've also spent another whole day photographing for this Mastering Portrait Photography channel. Two brilliant shoots all morning and all afternoon. So Beverly in the morning, Bob in the afternoon. Spent all morning, literally all we did was demonstrate different uses of reflectors and scrims. Now, luckily, the weather was kind, it was sunny, and we could do it really effectively. Had it been a wet day, I'm not quite sure what we would have done. Obviously, probably picked a different topic, I guess. But it didn't, the weather was great, so we spent the whole day, or the whole morning rather, showing different ways of using reflectors and scrims. So look out for that video on the channel. And then in the afternoon, Bob, who is our favourite neighbour. Sorry, all of the neighbours, but Bob, he's 83. He's an old friend of the business. He's one of the nicest, kindest gentlemen on the planet, a proper old school gentleman. Always goes everywhere with a shirt on and a jacket, always has his trilby. Just a wonderful gent. And he came and very kindly let us photograph him for a couple of hours. And we did it entirely using speed lights, but off camera. So that's another video that will come out showing just the potential of the simplest and not the most expensive bits of kit. A speed light, a trigger, in a couple of instances, an umbrella, a small cheap umbrella, just to show how versatile that can be. And if you're curious, head over to my Instagram feed, that's Paul Wilkinson Photography, and one of those pictures is on there, and you can see quite clearly how effective even this as a simple bit of kit can be, and we'll put those videos together for you. And then another stunning wedding this week. It's just been a great week, or a great month actually, for weddings. They've all been beautiful, and the weather on the whole has been very kind to us. An old friend came over for beers, which was great. And then of course we've culminated the week today with just the nicest walk. It's just been lovely. And that's my week. I hope yours has gone really well too. Again, sorry for this being an 8-day week podcast. Can't help it. Sometimes I just don't find the time to sit and record one. And besides, last night was the Eurovision Song Contest, and who am I to interrupt my enjoyment of a whole load of 26 trashy songs and some slightly crazy stage invasion, and for the sake of recording a podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed that. It's great to watch. I think the German entry was my favourite in the end. A little bit Ed Sheeran, but I loved the staging. I thought the imagination of the staging was the best of all of them. For my money, that's the one that should have won. I thought England, or Britain rather, the UK, should have done a little bit better. I was a bit disappointed with that, but I still think she did pretty well. And in the conditions when some loon races onto the stage and steals your microphone, I think she did remarkably well. She's obviously someone who learnt to sing in student union bars. That would have prepared her for it. So anyway, on to this week's topic. This is in response to a comment that was put on my Instagram feed, funnily enough, either last night or this morning. I found it this morning, and it asked me how to go about, or how I'd go about, setting up an edit suite. So where you're going to do your production, where you're going to do your retouching, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought I'd answer that as best I can. This isn't the be all and end all of how to do it. This is just how we do it. So bear with me. And if you disagree, feel free to drop us an email or comment, and I'll pick those up. And you never know, you might give me some really good tips. Firstly and foremost, wherever and whatever you do with your edit suite, it's got to be comfortable. I know that goes without saying, but you'll be surprised the number of people I've seen edit in the oddest of places. Even here, we have a slight compromise in that our studio is wonderful. It's light and it's airy. But of course, that causes me a real problem. So in the big window that I sit by, we now have big daylight blinds that shut down and don't allow any daylight in at all. It sounds really it sounds a shame that we've got this beautiful sunshine around us. And what do? I do my damnedest to get it so that it doesn't shine into the studio. Of course, that's because I don't need reflections on the screens. I need a very even lighting, and you do, to work effectively, to get your colours and tones right, you need to have a limited amount of light hitting the screens. The edit suite needs to be somewhere that is reasonably dim, or dimly lit, or not quite dark. You don't want it pitch black, but you don't want it bright. If you have, like we have, one of the Spider light, one of the Spider color calibrators, on the back of that, it actually monitors how much ambient light you have in your viewing. So where you stick it onto the screen, and it will measure how much light is striking the screen. You'd be surprised how dark it wants it to be for you to effectively do edits. So it needs to be dimly lit and comfortable. For me, I like it quite quiet or loud. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I mean it's somewhere where I'm not going to be disturbed too much, and I like the peace and quiet, but I also like occasionally to turn the music volume up really loud. So, of course, it's each to their own. Some people do it listening to a podcast or two, maybe this podcast. Some people listen to the radio. I like to have Spotify on turned pretty loud. If I'm doing a series of edits where it's bish, 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 lots of repeated edits, sometimes I put Netflix on to a screen and watch that or just have it playing in the background. I don't pay very much attention to it. My program of choice would be, I think, Midsummer Murders. Midsummer Murders. Why Midsummer Murders? Well, Midsummer Murders is one of those things where you can step away from it for 20 minutes, come back to it, and you don't need to worry about picking up what's gone on. It'll just become apparent. It's very straightforward. You don't have to pay attention. It burbles away in the background, and it just keeps me amused if I'm doing image after image after image. Lots of programs like that. If a program is too complicated and I have to actually pay attention, it's no good to have on in the background. For me, we have two calibrated screens in front of me. I have my iMac 5K, which is, of course, beautiful, but not particularly accurate, even when it's calibrated. It's okay, but everything on there looks great. I also have a BenQ calibrated monitor. This thing is brilliant. It's incredibly accurate, and nothing looks quite as good as it does on the Mac. So why would I use a screen when nothing looks quite as good? Because, of course, if I can get it to look good on there, it should look good anywhere. And that's the trick, is you calibrate your screens, find the one that is closest, most accurate, and in this case, the BenQ is more accurate. And of course, when you get it to look good on there, it's going to look good pretty much anywhere. And I always use two screens, even when I'm working on the cruises, when I'm working on my MacBook Pro. Here's a tip. There's a great bit of software called Duet, and I plug my iPad Pro into my MacBook Pro, and it sits beside the MacBook, and I run Duet, and it simply extends the MacBook Pro as if it's sort of the second screen and uses the iPad Pro as the second screen. Why do I do that? Well, I do it because while I'm doing the edit, I like to have a view on the second screen of what the whole image looks like. Okay, and I always have done that. I find it really hard to edit on a single screen, so I always edit on two screens. When I'm working in Lightroom, of course, there's just a simple button that you hit that brings up the second screen. So when I'm color calibrating, when I'm setting the colors or when I'm cropping, I can see exactly how the finished image is going to look on my second screen. If I'm editing in Photoshop, I set the navigator. Now, those of you who know Photoshop will know that there's a navigator window. I drag that navigator window onto my second screen. I make it as big as I can, which essentially is the entire size of that second screen. And then whatever I'm doing on my front screen, when I'm editing pores in the skin or spots, or I'm colouring, or I'm, you know, whatever I'm doing, I can look straight across to the second monitor and see the whole picture and know that I'm getting it right in context. You know what it's like. You get into a little bit of editing and you're down there in the detail and little tiny pause, edit, and then you look at it when you bring it back to normal size and it's either overdone or you've missed a bit or it just doesn't look right, you know, whatever it is. So I always have a second monitor. It's always there. The best trick I ever learned was to use the navigator pane, drag it across onto your second screen, make it really, really big. And then wherever you are, whatever you're doing on the main screen, you can see the whole picture on your second screen. So I always use two screens. I also always use an Intuos Wacom or Wacom Pro. So it's the Wacom Intuos Pro with a pen tablet. Love this thing ever since I first picked one up. Now, I've met plenty of people who hate them, and you're wrong. I'm sorry, but you're wrong. The Wacom is great. I don't know how to pronounce it. Is it Wacom or Wacom? Wacom sounds kind of childish, but better than Wacom. Wacom sounds sort of like an American town in the Midwest. Anyway, it is an absolute piece of kit. Get it calibrated, and sorry, not calibrated, get it set up. Get it set up for you so that the pen pressure and the area you're working in is really good for you. Now, I always have it in mouse mode, not pen mode. I set it so that I don't have to move my hand too far around the whole time. So that way I don't stress my hand, it doesn't get tired. I can sit and work for hour upon hour upon hour without my arm getting tired. And for me, I have the pen tablet set right in front of me on the desk with the keyboard beyond it. I started out with the Wacom sat to the side, the tablet sat to the side, to my right-hand side of the keyboard, and that felt really natural. And then somewhere I read that it's more natural to have it in the middle, which felt really weird when I set it up. But after all of these years now, that is absolutely the most natural place for me to have it, as if I was writing on a pad of paper or sketching. It just sits there. I know the thing really well. It's set up for me, and it means that there's no stress in my arms and shoulders. It's just the most natural thing. So for those of you who don't like using a pen, don't use it for everything. You only use it for retouching. One of my assistants here in the studio was forever losing files. I mean, every time she sat at one of our computers, files would simply go missing. We'd have to go looking in folders and drag them back from where they seemed to have just ended up. And I watched her working, and it's because she did everything using the pen. And that's not great. The guys at Xerox and MIT developed the mouse for good reason. It's a better interface for most of what we do on a computer. Don't give up the mouse. That's a silly idea. Use the pen for when you're drawing. Use the mouse for when you're using the computer. And I had to teach her, it took me a long time to stop using the pen when you're doing file operations, because you keep dropping files in random places. This is not the way to do it. Always use the pen for when you're retouching. Use the mouse for when you're doing anything else, and then you'll have a whole lot more fun with it and you'll enjoy it. For all those people who really don't like the Wacom, I bet you that's why you've not enjoyed it. And I have everything right at my fingertips. So anything I need, all of the software is already connected to all of the folders I need. I don't have to unplug drives. I don't have to go anywhere. So when I sit and get into that zone, you know, that zone where you've got, I don't know, 40 images where you're going to retouch them in a day or retouch them in a few hours, however your timings are, it doesn't really matter. You want to be able to get through them and not leave the job half done. For that, everything is connected, all the drives are there, everything's going to work. I can sit and I can finish it without being interrupted with, oh God, I need to go find that file or this background or whatever it might be. Everything is absolutely at my fingertips, so nothing will slow me down. I also occasionally plug in headphones. If I've got a complicated edit and I know it's going to take me some time and I really, really, really don't need to be disturbed, if it's a complicated composite or something, then of course I stick on a really nice pair of headphones. I have a beautiful set of Bose noise cancelling headphones, and that kills everything. And I can sit and turn up the music as loud as I like and nobody will disturb me. Hopefully nobody will disturb me and I can get through it. I've also got an incredibly comfortable chair. Now, I was paid for a job. In fact, I was paid for a job photographing furniture a few years ago with this incredible chair. It's the most comfortable thing I've ever had. Brilliant. I mean, it's the most expensive office chair I've ever had, I think, but it's also wonderful. Get yourself a really comfortable chair and get everything set so that there's no stress on you. Your back's not going to hurt, your eyes are not going to hurt, your arms are not going to hurt, because if you are working under any kind of stress, apart from the fact that it's not good for you, your retouching is not going to be as good as it should be. And take lots and lots of breaks. And by that, I don't just mean take breaks away from your computer, though you should. I mean, when you've finished an edit, if you have any thoughts in your head at all that it's not quite right, just walk away for 10 minutes. Come back to it. Trust me, when you see it finally, it will look, things will look different to you. You will spot errors. Again, always, if you think, if you're teetering on the edge of thinking I might have overdone it, back off all of those retouch layers, but always step away, come back to your screen, or maybe print it and have a look. Take time away. The same is true when you're mixing down music. The best thing to do is when you've done the mix down, is we'd run it onto a cassette, go out into the car park. Sorry, sorry, kids. I said cassette and I meant cassette. There's, when I used to do recording with bands, we used to go out into the car park, plug the cassette into a car cassette player, shut the doors and listen to it. And because the cars we were talking about had really quite crappy cassette players, you could hear everything, because your mix in the end on music has to sound good on whatever it's going to be played on, not on thousands and thousands of pounds worth of speakers in a studio. It's got to sound good in a car or on a radio in a kitchen or whatever it might be. The same is true of your edits. So come back to it after a bit, have a look, maybe print it. And if you're worried, email it to yourself and bring it up on a phone. That's another great way of seeing it. One thing that's for certain is I can always spot a vignette that's been not particularly well done when it's smaller. When the file's really big on a screen, it's harder to spot. And of course, you're working really big on a screen. But when you shrink it right down to a thumbnail, trust me, that's when you see the telltale signs of there being vignetting or their vignetting being too heavy. So do all of these tricks, but your edit space should be somewhere where you feel completely at home, completely at ease and relaxed, dimly lit, really comfortable. It should also be really tidy. And this is where the reality of my life and what should be are completely and utterly different. My edit suite is anything but tidy, and it frustrates the hell out of me. But it's just one of those things. I'm not the most natural tidy person. I'm incredibly busy. The only place where I'm really picky about things being tidy is inside the image. I don't like anything out of place. I don't like there to be any artifacts or crap. I like it to be absolutely how I want it. But in the real world, well, yeah, my desk is something else. So don't take that particularly from me. Go and tidy your desk. Make sure it's really nice and organized, and you'll feel a whole lot better for it. I know that because when I do eventually tidy my desk, it feels so good. Everything's organized and I feel so much better about everything, but it just rarely happens. So that's it. That's how I would approach setting up your edit space. Very simple, nice and comfy, dimly lit, everything at your fingertips, and you will love doing your edits. So that's the end of this, our 8-day podcast. I hope you've had the most wonderful weekend, just as I have with family and with loved ones. And the weather has been kind, the shoots have been creative, and all in all, life is good. So until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.